Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We welcome in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2 to our show, as we do every Monday here at 8 o'clock. Corey, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Fantastic. How are you guys today?
We are also fantastic as well. Good. And Corey, a lot to get to with you here today. I want to start with the quarterback movement in the NFL, or at least the quarterback turmoil in the NFL as well. We've seen, obviously, Matthew Stafford gone, Carson Wentz changing addresses. We've heard about the drama with Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Now Russell Wilson, some drama with the Seahawks as well. Have you ever seen an offseason quite like this with quarterbacks around the NFL? And what do you think it means moving forward? Could we see more quarterback movement in the years to come?
Well, I think there's two things. Number one, I think we're seeing younger coaches and general managers more willing to trade than we were in the past. I think in the past, I mean, we just didn't see a lot of trades in the National Football League. They just didn't happen. And I know, like, Sean McVay in particular is more than willing to mortgage assets to get exactly what he wants. So I think there's a willingness to do it right now, and we'll see if that willingness continues. The other thing is, and we're seeing kind of with Deshaun Watson, and we might see with Russell Wilson, is you're seeing more of that NBA vibe working its way into the National Football League. Because in the NBA, the players control virtually everything. And I think quarterbacks in the NFL are starting to see how much control that they have. It's, you know, it's tough for a tackle or a linebacker to, you know, hold a team hostage. They'll just move on and get somebody else. But quarterbacks don't grow on trees. And I think these guys are realizing that. And I think they realize how much leverage and how much strength that they have in the league, because they're the guys that ultimately make the teams go. So if I had to bet, I would say that this trend continues.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And frankly, I find it more entertaining this way. I mean, I think like the NBA offseason is incredible every year, you know? And so this has been, to me, the most interesting NFL offseason I can recall. So I say, let's have more of this, Corey, but I say 17 games is stupid, and I want you to join me in complaining about it every day. Do you agree with me or no?
Joe, I think it's incredibly stupid. I think it's short-sighted. And, you know, I always say, you know, I think sports owners and leagues need to understand that sometimes less is more. You know, NASCAR overshot its reach and hurt itself mightily. And you look at the National Football League, and you know, I know it used to be 12 games, it used to be 14 games, and now we're sitting here at 16 games. I know this, it is a struggle to get to the finish line with a healthy team. I mean, we see Mike Vrabel all the time, where we watch the practice report go, no practice for this guy, no practice for this guy, because he's trying to get them to the finish line. And you know, now we want to add a game, you know, because it obviously makes more money, and they're in the business of making money. But you also want the best product that you can possibly have. And, you know, ultimately the players will cave on it because they'll get more money and could get more jobs. And I think that's what I would want more than anything. If I was players, I'd want more jobs if they were going to have a 17th game. But the other thing, you know, one of the great things about the National Football League, and you're teetering at that brink, is every game means something. And, you know, because with baseball, you cannot watch for a month and it doesn't matter. You know, they play 162 games, it goes forever. And in the NFL, you know, every game means something. But, you know, you're pushing it more out, and, you know, they mean less and less. And so I think this is one of those situations where less is more. I don't like it at all. I mean, I love the NFL. I could watch it twice a day, every day, but part of that is because every game means something, and I want to see the best players on the field. I mean, it doesn't mean I just want to watch anybody out there. I don't want to watch the 74th player on the team.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Corey, Obviously, last week, the Titans making the decision to move on from Adam Humphries. I don't think a big surprise there. And we'll see what the future looks like with Corey Davis. But regardless of what his future looks like, A.J. Brown's going to have to be a big part of the passing game next year for the Titans. Obviously, he was great last year, and as we found out, basically was injured the entire season. As you look at A.J. Brown and assuming that he's healthy next year, what do you think the next step is for A.J. Brown in this offense?
Wow. I mean, I hate to say, I hate to think there has to be a next step. I mean, he's already really good. And here's the thing, you know, when we look at like his productivity, you know, they're still a running football team, you know, so, you know, they're not a team that wants to throw it 45 times a game and wants to give one receiver 15 targets a game. I think if we could see him healthy for the whole season next year, I think that would be nice. And I know he was healthy his rookie year. But if he's healthy, but I think, you know, the other thing is, you know, whether it's Corey Davis or somebody else, they need to have somebody else over there because, you know, teams are over, you know, they'll over and under him to death if the Titans don't have another viable option. So, you know, that's kind of a concern for me. I just need to see him continue on this track. I mean, you know, I know he had that, he had those couple of drops, but that was more of an anomaly than anything else, but he gets open. He catches the ball. He's great with the football in his hands. Loves the game, plays hard, shows up hurt. I don't know what more to ask of him.
Yeah. Given what you just said about the importance of someone on the other side and, you know, the cut of Humphries, a lot of different places where, you know, we're probably going to see John Robinson cut, but does that make you feel any different, any better about them really making a push to keep Davis?
Well, I think the thing that I keep pointing to that makes me think that Corey could be coming back, number one, as I say, he is a good fit for this team. And I think he knows this team's a good fit for him. And I keep going back to John's presser almost 2 weeks ago. I think it was Terry McCormick asked him about adding speed to the receiving core, and he went on this diatribe about what they like in a receiver, and that's getting open, catching the ball, doing something with it. And then he went on and on about the importance of blocking and digging out safeties. And I'm like, he's basically describing Corey Davis to a T. Now, if he thinks he can go get another Corey Davis at a lesser price, he can go do that. But, you know, I don't know how many of those guys are out there that block as well as he does and are capable of being a 1,000-yard receiver.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on with us here on Robbie and Rex Row. Corey, switching gears to the Nashville Predators, they've won 4 out of their last 5 games, a couple of big wins over the weekend against Columbus. Are you noticing anything with this group right now that is making you feel differently, that maybe they can dig their way out of this hole? Or is it simply you're playing against the Red Wings and the Blue Jackets and the competition about to step up in a hurry for the Predators here this week?
Oh, I think they're playing better. Now, is that going to be good enough? We're going to find out. I think that's important. But they're certainly playing better. I think they're playing faster. You know, they look more decisive with the puck. I don't think they're gripping the stick quite as hard as they were. They're certainly playing better in front of the goaltender. But I think that, you know, when you just look at, you know, tangible on the stat sheet, you know, what's one big difference? You know, the special teams have been so much better. I mean, you remember when the season started on the penalty kill, they couldn't have stopped the three of us.
Yeah.
I mean, teams were scoring at will, and it's been a few games now since they've given up a power play goal, and that power play unit with Forsberg and Tolvanen has really started to become an effective one for this team. So special teams are much, much better. Playing in front of the goaltender is much, much better. They still need to put more pucks actually on the net when they're shooting it, but I think that's starting to get better. I don't think they're pressing quite as hard as they were.
All right, where do you come in on, we just had the discussion, March Madness. I say best sporting event we've got. What say you?
Oh, wow. March Madness is pretty spectacular. It is, you know, when you talk about like things that we cover, I mean, March Madness is really, when you walk into that arena and you've got all those teams there and the fans from all over the place, it's pretty special. I mean, and I don't know of any other event that gives you the Cinderella like you get in March Madness. So I would, you know, you'd have to convince me something else. I've always been a huge fan of March Madness, for all the reasons I just stated. And, for one event, you know, one tournament, it's pretty fantastic.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Corey, appreciate you taking time to join us as always, my friend. Great stuff.
All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy the week.
Absolutely. You as well. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more of what we talked about with Corey there, revolving around A.J. Brown and this Tennessee Titans offense. What's the next step for A.J. Brown? How could it affect A.J. Brown if Corey Davis is not a part of the fold next year? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer.
Free beer!
Who doesn't love, very nicely done. Who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House, located at Opry Mills Mall. And I hope you're excited about that, just like Ryan Porth is today here on the program.
Free beer!
Yes, very well done. Ryan Porth, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Corey Curtis from News 2 for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, I'm interested to get your thoughts, because obviously we know Adam Humphrey's not a part of the fold anymore for the Titans. We'll see what happens with Corey Davis. I brought up A.J. Brown in the last segment. We know how good he's been through two seasons with the Titans. Last year, 70 catches, over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns for A.J. Brown, and doing that while hurt for pretty much all season long for the Titans. How important is it for the Titans to have a piece alongside A.J. Brown, whether it's Corey Davis, whether it's somebody else, to take some attention away from him so you can't just single him up or double him all game, I should say, if you're the opposition?
Yeah, well, I think it's very important. And obviously Derrick Henry also factors into that equation on the whole, you know, how you're using all 11 guys. I mean, I think sometimes that can help A.J. Brown too, but, you know, just in general, the idea of a safety kind of creeping up a little bit. But certainly, I think he needs a good player on the other side. There are some guys in this league, like your guy Devontae Adams, who probably don't. Like, you know, like there's just guys, yeah. There's a absolute top tier of receiver in this league where it's like, do whatever you want, and maybe he doesn't have much help. Of course, it also helps that Aaron Rodgers is the one throwing him the ball. But, you know, he's a guy that, for example, to me, like, he transcends the situation. I don't know that A.J. Brown does or not. But I'm also not discounting that in the future. I think A.J. Brown, Corey Curtis laid it out pretty well. All the things he brings, like, everything to the max, including just a lot of heart and playing through injury and playing really well through injury a lot of last year. So I think everything you see from A.J. Brown says, no, this is a franchise receiver. But does that mean, I don't know, like, what his ceiling is. I don't know. Can he get to that very top tier in this league? I'm not sure about that, but I do know that next year and in the short term here, if it's him and a bunch of, you know, Khalif Raymond type guys, it's probably not going to help him.
Well, that's why I asked Corey about, you know, the next step for A.J. Brown. I think everybody would agree he's been fantastic so far for the Titans. And I think when it comes to draft picks, like, if you would have told me that A.J. Brown was drafted fifth overall, I mean, those are the type of numbers that he's putting up so far. Like, he's been that good for the Titans. And I know Corey Davis, he was drafted fifth overall and never is going to live up to probably that pick or that selection. He's a really good player. But all in all, and you said this last week, when you combine, like, the picks for A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, what are you, like, 28, 29 somewhere? Like, you'll take that if you're the Titans based on the production those two have had specifically last year when together. But A.J. Brown, I mean, he was hurt last year. We talked about, like, the Instagram Live he did from after the operating room was done, like, the procedure was done. I mean, obviously there were things going on with A.J. Brown where he didn't practice a ton last year. So I do wonder, like, if he's healthy and as he continues to mature and get better here in this Titans offense, what does his ceiling look like? Like, what is the next step for A.J. Brown? Because I think if you're the Titans, like, you'll sign up for the year he just had every single season. 70 catches, over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns. But I do feel like, to your point, Joe, there is more that he's going to be able to give as they go forward here. Now, a lot of that's going to depend on the pieces around him. How does Todd Downing fit into this as well? Calling the plays, is there a drop-off from him to Arthur Smith? I mean, there are a lot of factors that go into this discussion, but I do think A.J. Brown is a guy that can continue to get better over the next few years, and that's exciting if you're a Titans fan.
So that injury, he's in the hospital. That was a knee, right? It was like we got scope or something like that. I mean, not like a massive knee injury, but a knee. So that's a knee, and then we know just watching game after game that he had an ankle thing.
Right.
So he had a knee and an ankle, and I'm not sure if it was either, you know, both sides or the same side, but regardless, think about how he played despite that. Also goes back to Corey's point, and probably as good a point as any against the 17-game idea. I mean, you know, how banged up, how much more banged up do you want these teams to be? How much are you potentially hurting your product by adding inventory? But regardless, A.J. Brown there's been nothing that's not impressive. And it's sort of off the field, kind of reminds me of like Kevin Byard in terms of, I think he's a student of the game, which I know some people probably think that's overrated, but I don't at all. I think that a lot of guys in this league find a little bit of an edge, find a little bit of a difference if they understand how to study film and what to do with it. And I, you know, I think he's learned from Byard on that. So he's just like the guy who he goes again to the max in every way you want a guy to go to the max. It's just, the question is just simply to me is just like, what is the best of A.J. Brown? Because sometimes guys are really good early, and then that's what they are. You know, they stop somewhere along the thing. I don't know if he can be the elite receiver in the NFL, but he certainly has a chance to be a star for this franchise for many years. And I mean, I don't think there's any doubt the way he's playing, barring some kind of injury. Like, there's a guy who, you know, the Titans are going to be looking to extend, I think, before he ever gets to the market.
Yeah, I think so too. And I agree with you. Like, there are guys, and we see it all the time in the NFL, who come in and they're really good, but they never really, you know, take that next step and get better. But Joe, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I also think there's a pretty big factor in the NFL that I think is underrated by a lot of people, and that is just how much opportunity there is for player development and for players to get better. Like, I think it's, people are especially guilty of it with receivers and running backs, and not as much with quarterbacks, because that's a position we focus in on so much. I think people are guilty sometimes of just thinking, all right, okay, you know, this guy is coming to the league, this is what he is, and this is what he's going to be for the next 5-6 years. And a lot of times players just get a lot better. Like, you brought up Davante Adams. Like, he's a guy who's gotten tremendously better over the course of the last few years. Like, he came in and he was good, but I mean, you're talking about a guy that caught 38 balls in his first year for 400 yards. Now he's a guy that's catching 115 passes a season. Like, there is a progression that takes place that sometimes when we're looking at players and looking at how they factor in the offense, especially when they're young, like A.J. Brown is, I don't know if we factor that in as much as we should. Obviously, it's hard to, you know, determine exactly what that means and where he's going to go from here. The guy's 23 years old. I mean, there's still a lot of room to get better.
No, I agree. No, and if he does and he becomes that top echelon guy, I'm not going to be shocked. You know, I just don't know. I mean, it's hard to get there. He's already so good, you know. I mean, he's already – like, you would take this, exactly what he is, you'll take that, and you'll take it for 10 years. You know, I mean,
sure.
And no complaints. So you're right. Player development does not get enough attention in the NFL. It happens, and then it doesn't happen. And I do think that, you know, it's just like anything. I mean, it really is something that you could apply to any field. I mean, if you're an obsessive worker who is focused on your craft and making it better, and you can put away the distractions and be singularly focused on that, well, then you got a chance to be that type of person in your field. And I do think he's got the makeup for that. We've seen that.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in and says, I believe Davis is important to keep if possible, but I also believe any wide receiver could be good on the opposite side with AJ and with Derrick Henry still holding corners just for a few seconds during the play action handoffs. Wide receivers can get loose and open with that combination. What do you think of the idea that it's important to bring Davis back if you can, but if you're able to go out and find a serviceable number two, they can put up good numbers based on AJ being on the other side and the attention that Derrick Henry commands in the backfield?
I mean, I agree to a point. I mean, look, you may lose Corey Davis and it doesn't mean you then stop playing offense. I mean, you know, there's guys out there. I really think that a promising rookie who is selected pretty high in the draft is an important thing here.
Yeah.
To add to the fold. Because you just, I mean, you have to have more depth in that receiving core. But yeah, you could go get plenty of guys who I think could be good options and probably for less than Corey Davis. I do think the blocking matters. I mean, Corey Davis.
I'm with you, buddy. Perfect. I'm come around on it.
Yeah, you love blocking receivers now. See?
My favorite
thing. Blocking receivers are one of life's underrated joys. But really, I mean, this offense is it absolutely. Derrick Henry will point out his long runs and how many times it was one of those guys who gave him the last 20, 30 yards or more than that in some cases. So he's perfect. And that's where I think some optimism should be there for the Titans fans is I just don't look at Corey Davis as a guy who, one, is like vindictive because they didn't pick up his option, because you have to be realistic about these things. And I think he's a very down to earth guy who understands how this all works. There was no way he was getting the option. And two, he may be able to get more money somewhere else, but he's on a winning team that has a chance to make more runs. And he fits perfectly here. He has great chemistry now with his quarterback, which I think really, really developed this year. Right. I mean, that's one thing we asked about in the Tannehill half season was, gosh, he and Corey Davis don't seem to really be connecting. Well, they are now. And obviously he and AJ Brown are a great tandem. So could Corey Davis, would he be willing to, you know, kind of bypass a few million for that perfect situation? I wouldn't rule it out.
When we come back, we'll continue this discussion with AJ Brown and get your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What does the potential look like for A.J. Brown? Where would you put him right now as you rank NFL wide receivers? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
For A.J., I just need to see him continue on this track. I mean, you know, I know he had that, he had those couple of drops, but that was more of an anomaly than anything else. But he gets open. He catches the ball. He's great with the football in his hands. Loves the game. Plays hard, shows up hurt. I don't know what more to ask of him.
That was Corey Curtis from News 2 who joined us earlier this hour discussing A.J. Brown and the next steps for his career. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're taking your reaction on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Discussing A.J. Brown and what the trajectory of his career looks like right now. And, Joe, let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texts in and says, we can throw to A.J. 15 times a game, no problem, but he already can't stay healthy. We need a legit number two wide receiver because of injuries alone. What do you think of that from Heidi?
Yeah, I don't disagree that they need more receivers. Absolutely. They have to have more depth, you know, and I don't know that they're going to have someone who steps right in and plug them in if AJ gets hurt. I mean, in this league, you have your star players and you need them to stay healthy and stay on the field. And that's the thing. I agree. He had the injuries, and so you're concerned about that, but he is a guy who plays through them, and you're impressed by that. And, you know, the fact that it's not like he's had anything that dictates, oh, well, he's going to have another year of injuries. You know, it doesn't, it's not like he's doomed to be addled by injuries every year, but just like Corey said, I mean, that's this league too. Everybody gets hurt and banged up, and it's hard to keep all your key guys healthy. It's hard to have enough quality depth, especially when a year when the salary cap goes down. So some of this is as simple as there's a lot of teams in the history of this league that might have won titles, but for some injuries, and some teams that have titles that can thank injuries to other teams or to their own really good luck in one year in terms of health. That's just how it goes.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in. It says, Brown is pretty good, but he needs to take a few more steps. I would not pay him the upper echelon money for the production he's been giving when his contract is up. Somebody else will definitely pay him. He's in a different category than Corey Davis, who might not get an offer. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with anything Ben said there.
Wow. Ben, I disagree with every word. I want you to retract all the words you said there, Ben. Yeah, I mean, look, if we're,
again, I shouldn't say that. I take that back. I do agree. He needs to take another step or two, see if he could be an elite receiver in the league.
Sure. But production, let's separate what someone is doing on the field and production here. Because A.J. Brown's production, as has been pointed out, as we pointed out, is not going to be, he's not going to be 120 catch 1800 yard guy
right
in this offense. It's not happening. I mean, A.J. Brown's production at this point is pretty freaking fantastic,
yeah,
relative to what he's playing in. So that production, again, while the offense is what it is, which is built around Derrick Henry, is elite. And you can't be confused by some numbers. Watch the dude play. Again, I think he is in the second tier of receivers, which is a very high tier already in the NFL. You know, I think he's still not at the level of the absolute top, top guys. I don't know if he'll get there, but I know that what he is, you're going to pay to keep. I mean, compare that to what the Titans have had at receiver for years and years and years. They've been waiting for this guy, and they got him, and you don't let him go.
Ben also asks, is it possible to give a contract extension to him now so you can get him locked up for the next 5 or 6 years without him hurting the finances? Well, if I'm AJ Brown, that's not going to happen. I mean, you get through the next couple of years here, you could be talking about some pretty big money if you're AJ Brown.
Right now, well, yeah, but also it's like the Titans aren't going to do that right now.
No,
anyway, you know, so, but when it comes time, they are going to try. I'm sure, barring something that really changes dramatically, they're going to try to lock him up and avoid him going to market. So now, so you think that he's just going to be like, heck no, I'm going to see what I can get out there no matter what?
No, I'm saying like if the Titans tried to do that right now, he'd be like, no, let me hold off for a minute. If I'm his agent, I would not sign a deal right now because I think the trajectory of his career, you could be costing yourself money if you try to sign a deal right now if you're A.J. Brown.
Okay, right, because he
I'm not saying the Titans shouldn't lock him up. They absolutely should, and he should. Yeah. I think he'll be receptive to it, but if I'm like you get to the end of this contract, you could be making some pretty good money if you're A.J. Brown.
Yeah, I mean, like if he has so far, you know, so in 2 years he's got 122 catches, 2,100 yards, you know, 17.4 a catch, which is big, 19 touchdowns, which is big. But if he has an 85 catch, 1,400 yard season, well, that's just, hey, it's still, that's the thing, you know, and it's where A.J. Brown's kind of screwed here is the contracts are still based on numbers, even if we understand what he is as a player,
right,
you know, the numbers still matter when it comes to that stuff, the negotiating back and forth. So yeah, if his numbers go up, then that contract just goes up. But look, when the time comes, barring something different, the Titans are absolutely going to do, I think, all they can to lock him up. And I think AJ Brown also is a guy who, when you talk about young players on your team who could be leaders of your team for a long time, I mean, A.J. Brown's a clear candidate there as well, and that's important.
It is, and look, we talked about this a lot throughout the course of the regular season, like trying to identify exactly where he fits in terms of the best wide receivers in the NFL. I'd agree with you. He's somewhere on that second tier. I don't know exactly where. I'm not sure I'd put him in the top 10 quite yet. But one area where he is elite, and I think maybe the number one receiver in the NFL, is running with the ball after it's caught. Like, that guy is an absolute physical freak after he gets the ball in his hands. And that's why I felt like I'm the Titans. I feel great about his production moving forward. Obviously, you can never be 100% sure based on injuries and how, I guess, you know, when you really think about it, everybody's one play away in the NFL from, you know, ending their career. But the thing that stood out to me about him this year was, even while he's hurt, he's still just an absolute menace to bring down with the ball after it's in his hand. And a question we had this year, Joe, was, could he kind of take the next step and become more involved down the field and in the deep passing game? And he did that. Right now, I mean, I think that may have been the most encouraging part of A.J. Brown's game, if I'm the Titans, is how much more they were able to go down the field with him and throw up those balls, you know, 30, 35, 40 yards down the field.
I agree. I mean, he came right out week one at Cleveland, and you saw the run after the catch ability, the incredible balance and strength for him that I think sets him apart, and he can run away from people. But you think about early in his rookie year, he was basically a very limited snap guy. They tried to run a couple things for him, and then eventually by the end of the year, we're still talking about, okay, can he beat, you know, press man against a really good corner, you know, at the end of his rookie year, to what we saw this year, a guy who absolutely improved his craft as a route runner with his get off at the line and everything. He was just flat out better. Now, he dropped a few passes this year, including one of those deep passes, and that's going to get brought up, because if you're talking about elite, then every mistake is going to be noted, and I think that annoyed him a little bit. But we saw progress without question, even though his yards per catch went down from 20 to 15. You know, his catches went up 8 by 18 as well. And he got a lot more attention this year. And like the Buffalo game, there's an example where they're like, well, we're just going to force it to him anyway. Yeah. And it worked. And so, if, again, I don't know where the ceiling is. We don't know until you see him get to it. But based on the year one to year two progress, which I think was actually pretty significant, it's going to be real. You think about A.J. Brown healthy, past the nagging injuries, and obviously if he's lucky, because he was hurt in camp.
Yeah.
I mean, he was leaving practices a lot in camp. So he didn't have a healthy second year at all, not a fully. Now, do you really have a fully healthy year in this league? Probably not much. But think about a healthy A.J. Brown to start next year with another year of progress and all the things he works on. Could be pretty special.
Well, the bottom line is they've been looking for a guy like this since Derek Mason walked out the door in Nashville. And they've tried time and time again to find it. They've spent resources in the draft to find it, and it just has not worked out. And now they've found that guy. Like, I'm comfortable saying A.J. Brown is an absolute stud, and he's going to be a stud, I think, for a long time here in a Titans uniform. So the question is, can this be kind of a trend now for John Robinson and the Titans? You found a wide receiver you feel really good about in A.J. Brown. Even though Corey Davis didn't live up to, you know, number 5 overall pick expectations, I think you feel really good about him too if you're able to keep him in the fold. But regardless of whether or not Corey Davis is here, can you add depth? That's going to be something that's key for this team. They need more depth at wide receiver. Can you continue to find good pieces in the draft at that position, which, as we know, Joe, like, if you paid attention to this franchise, that's been such a struggle for them to find for a long time.
Exactly. So keep him, hope he keeps developing. All signs are very positive in terms of improvement. And again, if he's this exact guy right now, that's still a guy you're paying to be on your team, and you haven't had something like that for a long time.
When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. A couple of big wins over the weekend against Columbus. Do we feel any differently about this team now than we did this time a week ago? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Ekholm with a shot to the blue line, and that deflected in. Predators Predators take a 2-1 lead at 16:54.
And the Predators are going to win this one over the Columbus Blue Jackets here this afternoon. Onto the boards, taken out. Here's Roman Josi. Josi has a man behind the defense. The shot and the score! Porpoisalo got a piece of it, but Eric Halla got enough on it to put it in the net for a 3-1 Predators lead and a shorthanded goal. And the pass comes out to center, and the Predators are going to win this one by a 3-1 tally. All I do is
a big weekend for the Nashville Predators, back-to-back wins against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the Predators winners of four of their last five. Welcome back in to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning. And speaking of the Nashville Predators, we've got your opportunity to win a pair of tickets to attend the Predators game tomorrow against the Carolina Hurricanes, and to help us do that, we welcome in Ryan Porth with a trivia question that you can text in the correct answer to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025.
That is correct. We were supposed to have a cue to call, but our phone lines are temporarily down, so we can't really reward a third caller.
That is correct.
So we've come up with a trivia question, and the first person to text in the correct answer at 615-737-1025 will win a pair of tickets to the Preds-Canes game tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. So here's the question. We've been talking a lot about Elli Tolvanen this morning, and Elli Tolvanen was the Predators' first-round pick in 2017. Can you name who the first-round pick was in 2016?
Ooh. I like it. If you have the answer to that question, if you can name the first-round pick for the Predators in 2016, send it into our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The first correct answer will win a pair of tickets to watch the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. And Joe, an impressive back-to-back performance from the Predators over the weekend. Only one goal per game given up. UC Saros makes both starts. What did you think of the Predators this weekend against Columbus? And how encouraged are you, if you're a Predators fan, about the way they've been playing, winners of four out of their past five games?
Yeah, they were good. You know, they did what you need to do. They did what they need to do to win games with this team. And this is the identity. Now, some nights, you know, if you don't get great goaltending, or you know, you make a couple big mistakes, you know, you lose because you're not going to go out there many nights and just outscore people. I mean, you have to be sound, responsible, structured team like this. And I thought that they were good, and Saros was good, and that makes that whole situation interesting too. I mean, 10-11-0, it's nothing to get all excited about right now. I think we're still overall heading toward, you know, some level of blow up with this franchise, but at least they keep making it interesting. They have played better with their best players in the lineup. I mean, that shouldn't be a surprise, but it's actually made a tangible difference. So now we get to see what they can do against a much tougher schedule.
And Roman Josi talked about the game yesterday and the weekend for the Predators as a whole and how they've started to turn their game around a little bit, feeling better, feeling more confident, winning four of their last five games. Here's what Predators captain Roman Josi had to say yesterday following the game.
Winning four out of five here. Just curious, how much has that allowed this hockey team to get its skates back underneath it a little bit and kind of regain some confidence in what it's doing?
Yeah, it's big for us. You know what, I thought starting that first game in Columbus where we didn't get the win, I thought our game was a lot better. And then we obviously won the second game in there. But I just think our consistency has been a lot better. So we can definitely take some confidence from the last five games. And but we got to keep it up. We got to play at that consistency for sure.
So that was Roman Josi after the game yesterday. And Joe, to your point earlier, like I found it interesting, UC Saros gets both of the starts over the weekend. Now we've talked about it. I think Pekka all season long has been the better goaltender, but he struggled on Thursday night against Detroit. Saros gets the start on Saturday. I was not surprised by that. You knew with the back-to-back that he would probably get one of the two, But when he got the start on Sunday as well, I'll admit I was a little surprised by that. What did you think of that move by John Hines and the Predators, and what do you think it means for them moving forward here?
Yeah, I was surprised too. Does it mean – certainly Saros played so well Saturday, like the idea that he would get the next start isn't surprising, but the fact that it was a back-to-back and, I mean, Pecorine, John Hines told us last week on the show, I mean, Pecorine right now is the number one goalie.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with this goalie situation. I think one stinker can change it. And Pekka had one of those last week and, you know, a couple soft goals. He still played well overall, and I would say better than Saros overall. But maybe this means it has flipped back. Maybe it means they just thought, you know what? Pekka's been playing so well. He's gotten a lot more work. Maybe just give him this extra time off, and then we'll reset next week. I don't know. It's one of the two.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because – I would, with the way Peck has played, like, you're going to have a bad game every now and then. Like, I don't think it's as simple as, oh, Peck was bad on Thursday, so we're just not giving him the starts anymore. Like, the more I think about it, the more I think, all right, Peck is 38 years old. Maybe you just wanted to give him a weekend off and see if that can freshen him up as they move down the stretch here. I mean, it's not like Saros was, you know, tested all that much on Saturday. Columbus. And look, the Predators deserve credit for what they did over the weekend, and obviously winning four out of the last five games and the way that they've done it, they've made improvements, and they look a lot better, especially on special teams. But that can also be true at the same time that Columbus right now, they're reeling. I mean, they've got some problems, and you know, you thought maybe bringing Patrick Laine into the fold maybe frees them up a little bit offensively. He's been okay so far, but they've got some issues right now scoring. They've scored two goals in their last three games. And I can think of maybe a handful of chances over the weekend where Columbus even approached being dangerous against the Predators. And a lot of that came with turnovers in their own zone by the Predators. Outside of that, as long as the Predators weren't turning the puck over, Columbus wasn't generating much of anything.
Yeah, Columbus is a massive disappointment right now. No doubt about it. I mean, I thought, well, frankly, I thought both these teams were going to be in the fight for a playoff spot. And, you know, I probably underestimated Florida like a lot of people did. But, that's the thing. I mean, really, you could say there's three really big disappointments in this division, and I'm not convinced that Dallas is going to stay there. I mean, I still think Dallas can figure it out, and I also still think Chicago will probably come back to earth. But it's been a pretty surprising division so far, really, overall.
It has, and now that the Predators have won four out of their last five games, do you think that they are turning things around, Joe Rexroth? Again, like, there's still a pretty significant gap between the top four teams in this division and everybody else. Right now, the Predators are in sixth in the division. They're 1 point behind Columbus, but still a seven-point gap between the Predators and the Hurricanes, who are in the fourth spot right now, which makes tomorrow's game crucial for the Predators. So you're 10-11. Like you said, you don't feel great at this point, but special teams in particular has been a lot better as of late. So do you feel like the Predators have started to turn a corner in that area specifically with their game?
Well, think of where they were, which was, oh my gosh, is this going to be one of the three, four worst teams in the league a couple weeks ago? That's what we were asking. To this, I mean, they've turned some corner. There's another corner or two ahead that I don't know that they're going to even approach, but I think they deserve a lot of credit for not listening to us, because most of our discussion has been who's getting traded, and for not letting that distract them from what they've got to do every day. I think John Hines deserves credit. I think the players deserve credit. They're fighting. This weekend to me was them like getting the most out of what they are.
Yeah.
Even against a struggling opponent, they got it done, and they are showing some fight, and I think they do understand what they need to do to win. I don't know that it's going to win enough for them when they play these good teams, but they do deserve credit. Absolutely. Because this was ugly at 6-10-0. Ugly. And all the discussion was ugly. And 10-11-0, nothing to be all excited about, but they fought for that. And they've at least kept themselves playing relevant hockey in March. And I would not have been optimistic about that 2 weeks ago.
I feel like a comeback to the playoff picture would be a lot more realistic if they had turned a few of those 11 regulation losses into overtime losses.
Yeah.
And if they were sitting here at 10-8-3, let's say, but the zero in the overtime loss column right now is hurting them in the standings. The fact that all their losses have come in regulation.
And they are the only team in the division that has not lost a game in overtime and or a shootout yet. One of the only teams in the league. I think there are three teams total in the league. Minnesota, Edmonton, and Nashville. Pretty incredible. We've gotten to this point and they don't have one of those yet.
It is weird. It also means, what's their overtime? What are they, won two or three? They've been in two or three of them?
I know at least two, yeah. I'll have to go back and look.
So they get there and they win, so that's good. But, yeah, get there more often. Scrape these points together. Every time you play Detroit, get 2 points, things like that. You know, you don't have a lot of margin for error.
We've got a winner on our trivia question thrown out there by Ryan Porth to begin the segment. Who was the draft pick for the Predators in the first round of the 2016 draft? The answer, Dante Fabbro. And the winner is Kyle on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Congratulations to Kyle. He'll be going to see the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. And speaking of the Nashville Predators, we'll continue that discussion when we come back. Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties on the Nashville Predators Radio Network. He'll join us next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.